Thank you, Simon, for that reading, and also for those who led the worship. What a great time that was, and an introduction for what is going to be said now. Keep going. It's incredible because this road reminds me of the last part of our walk Lebanon. We walked from the Syrian border in the south, right up the coastline. Israeli border in the south. It's just as well Doug's with me. I'm upside down, aren't I? Yes, from the Israeli border in the south, right up the coastline, and I was reminded that we were passing places where Jesus actually was, and it really excited me. And then we came to a road just like this. It certainly didn't have those markings on it. It was more like a wide lane. And Ronnie Bassous, who visited us recently, he was cycling around our little group because we had Emma, our youth pastor at the time. We had Craig Miller, who's at the back. And we had Tristan, too, who was walking with us. Three very fit young men and women. And poor us behind. And they were all ahead of us, and Ronnie said, you can see just up this road a tiny little white building. That is the Syrian border. You're nearly there. The trouble was, the nearer we got, the further away it seemed. And Doug and I just were trying to find ways of keeping us going. So we started singing through the alphabet. We got to J, and I was singing, Jesus loves me, this I know, and it kept us going. And we got to K, and suddenly this song came up. Now, I wonder if you know this song. Keep right on to the end of the road. Come on, I want you to sing it with me. Keep right on to the end of the road. Keep right on to the end. Though the way be long, let your heart be strong. Keep right on round the bend. Though you're tired and weary, still journey on till you come to the happy abode where all the love you've been dreaming of will be there at the end of the road. I just don't believe it. You knew it. That was fantastic. And that's what got us to the Syrian border, where there were some very straight-faced Syrian army men. And they didn't want their photographs taken, so we couldn't take their photographs. But that song captured me. Keep right on to the end of the road. And when I came home, I had to find out where it came from. And a man called Harry Lauder had written that song after his son died in the First World War. That is tough, isn't it? And through such heartache and such perseverance, he kept going. And as a result, he taught the Birmingham City fans to sing loudly at their team when they were losing to keep going. So he had an incredible effect on everyone. There they are, singing at the tops of their voices. Doug tells me they're not actually Birmingham City fans. Aston Villa fans. I don't know how he knows, but there we go. But you do know Doug knows everything, so it must be right. But you know, there's another man who really moved me when I read in the newspapers and also on television after his victory at the Golf Open Championship. Someone's nodding, so there are golf. Yes, I can see your golf. Anyone else play golf here? Some, yeah, we got hands up. He was incredible. And in an interview on the news, it was recorded through the toughest golf tournament there's ever been because of the weather, as it often is. He was quoting Psalm 27, verse 14, through the 5 days and 76 holes of a weather-beaten golf tournament that became the longest open in history. So what on earth were those words he was quoting? Here they are, Psalm 27, verse 14. Be patient, wait for the Lord, be courageous and brave. Yes, Be patient and wait for the Lord. And he said, and I heard him say it, and I read it in the paper next day, he fought with me to the finish. And that guy knew Jesus, and he had him alongside him all the way. But I share those things with you because they're a wonderful illustration alongside James in this passage. What a difference there is in James since we were introduced to him right at the beginning by Rob. He was someone who was suspicious of his brother. He wasn't sure that he was the Messiah. But because Jesus appeared to him and he got to know who he really was, he makes such a difference when we're going through tough times. And this is what we often think when we think about waiting. When we hear in Psalm 27, be patient and wait for the Lord. And then you hear in James 5, verse 7, be patient then, brothers, until the Lord's coming. You know, wait in our language is a bit like sitting still and thinking, what on earth is happening? Especially when we watch the news. I love that picture of that little one. And I've got to say, it's a Charlton Athletic hat, isn't it, Doug? They won yesterday. So did Chelsea. But we often see, and that mirrors how we feel at times. This lass is twiddling her thumbs. Well, at least twiddling a pen. We often think that waiting is inactive, it's passive, it's huffing and puffing and twiddling thumbs, continually asking God when he's going to sort things out. When are you returning to put the world right? Things are getting so bad. When are you going to answer my prayers for all those people I've been praying for? When will I really know if you're always with me? Why are you so silent? When are you coming back? We can spend time in waiting, but there's a verse that's really challenged me in 2 Peter 3, verses 8 and 9. The Lord is not slow in keeping his promise. Be reminded of this. As some understand slowness, he is patient with you, not wanting anyone to perish, but everyone to come to repentance. We live in an instant society, don't we? Instant meals, fast food, immediate communication, bank loans for instant buying. So how do we learn to wait as God has done since sin entered this world? Can you imagine what he has been through? He created this beautiful world. He created you and me to have close relationship with him and to have life that goes on forever, but not just quantity life, quality life. And he's been waiting all this time, and he even sent his son to solve the problem. That's why he died for us all and rose again, and that's why he's here with us this morning. And yet he's been waiting. So what do we do to understand what James is talking about waiting and being patient in the tough times and keep going? Well, first of all, we really have to ask this wonderful Jesus right into the center of our lives. That's what he died for, and that's what he rose again for. And it's so important that if we've been thinking about asking Jesus in, but we want to have everything just straight, and I know what that feels like. I wanted to know everything just as it was, until I came to a time when I said, okay, Jesus, and that verse, listen, I stand at the door and knock. If any man opens the door, I will come in. That had just been spoken. And I cried out almost to him. No one knew what I was saying. It was all in my mind. Listen, I don't know where the door is, but please will you come in and show me what it's all about? Do you know, that's the best thing I ever did. Because ever since, he's been showing me what it's all about. And he's shown me how to keep going in the tough times. And we need not to wait huffing and puffing. and questioning God all the time. We need to wait expectantly. Do you know, I just love the looks on children's faces as they're looking at presents at Christmas. I just love it. Because I'm a bit like that anyway. That's why I've put this man looking at one as well. Because us grown-ups quite like a surprise, don't we? I often get asked, what would you like? And I say, oh, give me that. And so I know what's coming. But I like a surprise. And the children opening and expectantly, they can't open it just yet. But you know, God, in his timing, is going to unwrap things for us, show things to us, especially when we're going through the tough times. I can remember nursing my mum and having to slow right down. And it was a tough time. And as I was pushing her around, I met so many people in our neighbourhood. It was absolutely amazing. And then when I heard funny sounds like that, God opened my eyes to see the person who could put it right. And it gives us, and we need to wait expectantly, got it, not get in a state about it. And also, we build relationships if we go through the tough times with God. We have to be careful because we can also fall out with people. We build relationships with our Turkish news agent. When we're out running and we feel like nothing on earth when we get back, we fall into our news agent, and boy, when no one else is around because it's early in the morning, we can really get to know them. They sometimes give us a drink. They talk to us. They share with us. They're incredible. And Tajim has come to our house group. And you also can learn with each other, waiting expectantly. Our house group shares. And we've got questions there for the house groups. But I'm looking forward to Tuesday to share, because people share some of the tough things they've been through. And we can learn from one another. So we need to wait expectantly. James says, and you know James is great. He follows in Jesus' footsteps. He used visual aids that people are used to seeing. Now, we don't see too many farmers on hills around here, but they saw loads of farmers planting, waiting, and he said, see how the farmer waits for the land to yield its valuable crop and how patient he is for the autumn and spring rains. I was talking to Arthur the other day because he knows far more about farming than I do, and it's a shame he couldn't be in here because I'd have got him up here and he could have explained it to you. But you know, waiting isn't just sitting around for him for the rains. He has so much to do. He's fertilizing the ground. He's looking after the crop that yet cannot be seen. And James is using the visual aids as they can see it and say, see how the farmer waits. He waits expectantly. It must be so difficult in our climate because we can have rain and sun. It was lovely having the sun this morning. Brilliant. But it looks as if it's gone in now, doesn't it? But you know, it's interesting, there's another verse about farming in Ecclesiastes 11, verse 4. He who watches the wind will not plant. Whoever looks at the clouds will not reap. You know, sometimes when we're waiting for all conditions to be favorable, we miss out on opportunities. Sometimes when we're going through rough times, we think, oh dear, this is no good, I'm no good. But I tell you, look at Jesus. If he was looking for favourable conditions, he would have stayed with the thousands at Judea who were flocking round him and listening to him and coming to know him and being healed. But because he was in touch with his Father, he left all of that and went out on a road in the heat of the day and possibly walked for 30 odd miles to find one lonely woman at a well. And listen, Jews never spoke to the Samaritans. This wasn't good conditions. And men never spoke to women. But he went in very difficult conditions at noon of the day, very hot, and and he must have collapsed on that well, and he said to her, "Please, I need a drink." He was so thirsty. And she said, "You're a Jew. I'm a Samaritan. What are you doing talking to me?" And then as he listened to her and he spoke to her, she came to know Jesus. And she brought her town to him. In the most unfavorable conditions, we need to sometimes step out when we might be waiting for certain things to happen. And God says, "Come on, let's get on with it together." But the next one is, we need to watch effectively like Jesus did. Yes, we need to wait expectantly and patiently, but we need to watch effectively. Again, here is James using the farmer and saying, watch, see how he watches for the rains. He's watching, but he knows when to step out. And James reminds us of the prophets in the past and the people in the past. And we all have so much to learn. You think of Esther, a tiny little lass. Whenever I see the children go out, you know, it's so great to pray for them, because you never know what God has in store for them. She lost her parents when she was a tiny child and was brought up by her cousin Mordecai. I wonder if she had dreams when she was younger. We often do when we're going through tough times and wishing things were great. But God was working beyond her dreams, because he had an incredible plan to save her whole nation through this little orphan. He was working behind the scenes. Over many years, God was working behind the scenes to save her nation. And would you believe it? She became queen. Now, I don't think many of us will be kings and queens here, but I tell you, God has his plan for you. Whatever you're going through, wherever you're at, he's got a plan. Look at Joseph, thrown into a pit, and he was going to be left there to die. But his brothers thought, "Oh, he's worth quite a bit. We'll sell him to the Egyptians." And he went through so much. And he kept on rising because of his character, and then people lying about him, they chucked him out. But eventually he became as strong and as powerful as Pharaoh himself, and was the means by which his nation was saved. And then Hannah and Samuel, another little lad, Samuel, who was the means by which he brought the word of God to his nation. So we need to work, to wait expectantly. We need to watch effectively and not think everything is going wrong. What is God doing behind the scenes? And then we need to work encouragingly. Don't grumble against each other. It's easier said than done, isn't it? Especially when you're going through tough times. And if you've been asking God all these things, you find yourself, the grumbling overflows to other people. I start grumbling at Doug at times. We have a bit of a grumble session, don't we, Doug?
You do.
Don't grumble against each other. Encourage one another and build each other up. Whoever we are, whether we're working full time, we need to encourage those we're working with. Whether we're working half time, or whether we're working at home, in our office, in church. Let's get stuck in. Whoever we are, God can use us. There's someone who was incredible in our church. If I can find it, I've lost it. Did I leave the card there, Doug? Here it is. I did ask permission to read this. 7 years ago, I was sent a birthday card. And I felt very low at the time. But you just listen to it and understand why Doug and I ended absolutely in hysterics afterwards. Listen to this. "Our Sue was an Essex lass, and goodness, can she run? She sprints up and down St. Catherine's Hill and really thinks it's fun. A few years back, when very young, She fancied Ronnie Cray, so made a trek to the East End. Alas, he'd been put away. But she did spy a nicer guy, one called Dougie B. Henceforth, she married him before moving down to the sea. That could be Christchurch or the sea. Sue noticed that the chapel girls needed to lose weight. I'm not sure about that. But so started a Keep Fit class every Thursday, dead on eight. These wives, they really did get fit and soon had he's and she's. So what did she do to satisfy? She started Busy Bees. Their activity still survives, and we're pushing out the wall. So the elders in their wisdom have made a bid for the Albert Hall. I don't know whether he's prophetic, but that is Len Spicer. And I've kept that card. If that isn't a poem, I don't know what is. I've kept that card ever since, because if I do feel down, I pick it up and I read it. Whatever we are, we're not useless. And whatever age we are, or whatever we're going through, God can use us. Look at what James says, and I found this so challenging about working encouraging. You have heard of Job's perseverance and seen what the Lord finally brought about. You know that God allowed Satan to remove all his possessions, his wife and family, and his health to prove that he would not lose faith in God. After many years of pain and criticism from men, Job never gave up, and God restored everything to him and so much more. You will read many speeches if you want to read Job. It's a tough book to read, masses of speeches by men who are criticizing him about how he is dealing with his tough times. But just listen to what he says within it all. I also could speak like you if you were in my place. I could make fine speeches against you and shake my head at you. But my mouth will encourage you. Comfort from my lips will bring you relief. Isn't that incredible? I found that so moving. And I read Job again with those words in mind, and it made such a difference. I could make fine speeches, yes, but my mouth will encourage you. Comfort from my lips will bring you relief. So this is how James encourages us and how God shows us how we can wait expectantly, watch effectively, work encouragingly, and lastly, pray earnestly, because our relationship with God is vital. And it guards us from that last verse. Above all, my brothers, do not swear, not by heaven or by earth or by anything else. Let your yes be yes and your no be no, or you will be condemned. It keeps our relationship with God spot on, and we need to keep going with God. And I share this very quickly with you in closing. The toughest time I went through, and I've shared this before, was when I started to train for my first marathon. And I blame Steve right there at the back. He was the chairman of Poole Running Club. And he said to me one day, and I'd got into the first time I applied for it, and I don't know why. I have a feeling Steve might have been something to do with that. But anyway, I got in. And Steve said, look, you've been running on your own a lot. I wanted to get out on my own so no one could see how unfit I was. They thought I was fit, but I wasn't for long distance running. He says, you've got to come to the running club. And I thought, okay, I'll always do as I'm told if I've got to. And I went out and it was brilliant. I was used to running 6 miles, but they were taking me on a 10th mile, 10-mile race. I got there and they were all looking after me, and it was lovely. And I started to run with them all. And they were looking after me the first 6 miles, no problem at all. Then I hit the 7th mile. If any of you know Poole, there's a very long, slow hill called Gravel Hill. If you drive up it, you don't even notice it. But if you run it, If you've been running for 6 miles and you're not used to the seventh, you nearly die on your feet. And what made it worse, all the people who've been running with me were much stronger than me and much fitter than me, and they just carried on running. And they went ahead of me, and I was all on my own, completely alone. And it was getting dark, and I didn't know the way back. I was really panicking. And I was about to stop because the curb became very attractive. And as I looked down, my running shoes were plodding along. And suddenly, another pair of running shoes appeared alongside mine. They were much